Some pronounce it Habakkuk. That's how I pronounce it. Some Habakkuk. One of the minor prophets. We know very little about him. We don't get the genealogy that we get with some of the others. We don't get an etymology for his name where we know what his name means, why he's named that. Simply introduced as the prophet. Prophet in Judah around 608. Some date him as early as 612, some as late as 600. But what we do know about him comes straight from him. It comes from this very open and honest exchange with the Lord that he records for us in the book bearing his name, or is recorded about him. What we're going to do tonight is watch how it plays out, because you're going to see a very Job-like individual in some ways without all the personal turmoil of Job. When it opens, Habakkuk is sick and tired of the direction Judah has taken. And so he cries out. Verses 1 through 4 of chapter 1, the oracle which Habakkuk the prophet saw. How long, O Lord, will I call for help, and thou wilt not hear? I cry out to thee, violence, yet thou dost not save. Why dost thou make me see iniquity, and cause me to look on wickedness? Yes, destruction and violence are before me. Strife exists. Contention arises. Therefore, the law is ignored. Justice is never upheld. The wicked surround the righteous. Therefore, justice comes out perverted. Sounds awfully familiar. Sounds like the world that we experience on a daily basis. And Habakkuk starts by saying, God, I'm sick and tired of it. Why do I have to see this? Why are you allowing this to play out in the nation of your people? Why are you not doing something about it? And like he often does, like he did for Job, like he does for the other prophets, God answers. And he's very straight with Habakkuk. And at first, it's a very frightening thought. And Habakkuk is going to tremble at the idea. To sum it up, God basically says, wait and watch. I've got some things in store for Judah. I have some things in store for you. And so you're just going to have to sit back and watch them unfold. I will deal with it in my time. Starting in verse 5, look among the nations. Observe, be astonished, wonder, because I am doing something in your days, and you would not believe it if you were told. God said, pay attention, look around. Things are already moving, and they're going to happen in your lifetime. Behold, I am raising up the Chaldeans, that fierce and impetuous people who march through the earth to seize dwelling places which are not theirs. They are dreaded and feared. Their justice and authority originate with themselves. Their horses are swifter than leopards, keener than wolves in the evening. The horsemen come galloping. Their horsemen come from afar. They fly like an eagle swooping down to devour. All of them come for violence. Their horde of faces moves forward. They collect captives like sand. They mock at kings. Rulers are laughing matters to them. They laugh at every fortress. They heap up rubble to capture it, and they will sweep through like the wind and pass on. We'll get the second half of the verse in just a second there in 11. God says, I've got a plan. And Habakkuk, you're really not going to like it at first, but the plan is I'm going to use the Chaldeans, the ones that you've been watching wipe out nation after nation, the ones that you've seen that are ruthless, bloodthirsty, do not have me as their God, do not have a justice system like you're used to. And then in the second half of 11, he said, then I'll deal with them. But they will be held guilty they whose strength is their God. Several times in the Old Testament, we see God using unrighteous nations to punish His people. And yet at the time that they get done, He goes back and holds them accountable for what they've done. In other words, God has a way of using the things that are moving in this world to His benefit. But it doesn't mean that He necessarily approves of the Chaldeans, that He approves of their tactics. We go back to Habakkuk now, starting in verse 12. Art thou not from everlasting, O Lord, my God, my Holy One? We will not die. Thou, O Lord, hast appointed them to judge. Thou, O Rock, hast established them to correct. He's trying to figure this out. He's trying to make it add up. Thine eyes are too pure to approve evil. Thou canst not look on wickedness with favor. Why? Why dost thou look with favor on those who deal treacherously? Why art thou silent when the wicked swallow up those more righteous than they? Why hast thou made men like the fish of the sea, like creeping things, without a rule over them? The Chaldeans bring all of them up with the hook, drag them away with their net, gather them together in their fishing net, and they rejoice and are glad. Therefore they offer a sacrifice to their net. They burn incense to their fishing net, because through these things they catch a large. Their catch is large, and their food is plentiful. Will they therefore empty their net and continually slay nations without sparing? Habakkuk scratching his head. He's already wondered why God can allow Judah to go the direction she's going. How long He's going to let it happen. And now God has very pointedly told him, I'm going to use an evil nation to punish you. And so Habakkuk says, God, how? How can you let this happen? How can that be your plan? How can you let Judah take this path that's going to lead to her destruction? And then how are you going to use such an evil nation to destroy her? How can you let us die? You're not going to let us die. There's no way. You've appointed them to judge us, and I just don't get it. How can you approve of their evil? They're abusing those, in quotation marks, more righteous, as if Judah in her sin is a righteous nation. How can you approve of the way they're dragging off nation after nation? God, there's just no, it doesn't make any sense to me. You can't use the evil to punish the good. So chapter 2 opens. And he scratched his head and he scratched his head. And he finally says, speaking to himself there in verse 1, I'm going to stand on my guard post. I'm going to do my job as a prophet. And I'm going to wait and see how this plays out. I'm going to wait and see his response to me. Because I know he's not going to let me get away with questioning him. Habakkuk's seen Job. He knows the story. He knows that God allows the questioning, but he also knows that God comes back and puts us on the defensive, makes us answer the questions. Job, where were you when I laid the foundation of the world? And so Habakkuk knows, yeah, I've questioned God. Now I've got to wait and see what he says back to me. God does. He comes back in verses 2 and 3. The Lord answered me directly to the prophet and said, record the vision. Inscribe it on tablets that one who reads it may run. This vision is yet for an appointed time. It hastens toward the goal. It will not fail. Though it tarries, wait for it. It will certainly come. It will not delay. God says, Habakkuk, I don't expect you to understand. Habakkuk, I'm not going to explain it to you, but this is what I will do. I will tell you that you better believe I'm about to use the Chaldeans. You better believe that this is written in stone. You better believe that even though it's not happening tomorrow, it's going to get around to happening. You can bank on it. And so then, from verse 4 through the end of chapter 2, God pronounces woe upon woe upon woe on the evildoers. He's calling them into account for the things that they're doing in Judah. And he's telling them, I'm going to deal with these things, and the things that are going to fall on your head are because of these actions that you've taken. Then there's the good stuff. Then there is chapter 3. And it's Habakkuk's prayer. And it's going to include the moment where he gets it. Where the light bulb comes on. And he's wowed by what he realizes. Watch how this prayer starts. Chapter 3, verse 2. I've heard, and I know what you've done in the past. All right, God, I get that part. I get that this isn't going to be the first time that you've used an evil nation to correct your people. I've seen it happen in the Word. Then as he continues to pray, he says, God, let's do this again. Revive thy work in the midst of the years. In the midst of the years, make it known. In wrath, remember mercy. God, come to our rescue. Do what you need to do. Deal with us. Right in, we're about to see, off the mountain. Sweep away everything before you and handle this for us. And then he relates a vision to us, what he sees as he's praying. And he sees God riding down from the mountain, and this is a mistype as I read it, because he did this from Mount Nebo, but it is a reference to what Moses said about God riding down. And so Habakkuk is calling into effect a prophecy that Moses made right before he died, when he both blessed and warned Israel. Habakkuk sees God's glory overpowering everything in its path, sweeping away all of the evil. And seeing the future, he sees God handling everything. He sees God as the one being in control, even when things seem to be spinning out of control. He sees God being the one who's making the ultimate decisions. That description goes from verse 5 down through verse 15. Pestilence and plague, surveying the earth, watching the nations, mountains being shattered, ancient hills falling. Verse 6, his ways are everlasting. The tents being crushed, and this is all the part that Riley read. The Lord raging, the bow fighting back is empty. God breaking the earth, verse 10, verse 9 and 10. Stopping the sun and the moon, verse 11. Marching on the earth in indignation, verse 12. And so on. And then we go back after the vision to the rest of the prayer. To the rest of Habakkuk's thoughts in verse 16. I heard and my inward parts trembled. At the sound my lips quivered. Decay entered my bones and in my place I trembled. Because I must wait patiently, quietly for the day of distress, for the people to arise who will invade us. God, the weight's killing me. I'm terrified of this, but I know it's got to come, and the weight is killing me. I've got to wait for a day when this evil nation is going to ride in and destroy my people. But I know it has to happen to get to the other side, to get where we have to be. God, when's the relief going to come? When are you going to deal with Judah and then our oppression? Now then, here it is. Let's read. Read all of this. It's beautiful. Listen to the change in Habakkuk's thinking. Though the fig tree should not blossom, and there'd be no fruit on the vines, if the world goes barren, the yield of the olive should fail and the fields produce no fruit. If a drought and a famine come, though the flock should be cut off from the fold and there are no cattle in the stalls, we don't have any livestock left, God. Even if we reach that point, notice the though at the beginning, though the fig tree should not blossom, though we get to the very point that we are starving to death, I will exalt in the Lord. I will rejoice in my salvation. The Lord is my strength. He has made my feet like hinds' feet and makes me walk on high places. Encouraged, strengthened by the vision of a God who prevails and sweeps evil away in his path, Habakkuk has changed his question. Habakkuk has changed his thought process. He's gone from the beginning when he said, why? Why is God allowing this? Why is God allowing Judah to exist? Why does he allow the Chaldeans to exist? Why is he going to use the Chaldeans on us? To at the end, he's saying, who is this God who can sustain me in the things that he allows? He's the one, and it sounds a lot like some of Isaiah's writing. The Lord God is my strength. He's made my feet like hinds' feet. He makes me walk on high places. All of a sudden, Habakkuk has realized God is sufficient for the task. That God can not only handle the evil, but that he will support the righteous through the evil and bring them out on the other side. So the point tonight is life happens. Life's real. Bad things happen. Good things happen. Accidents happen. Things collide in our world. And sometimes the righteous and the innocent even get caught in the crossfire. And that's part of Habakkuk's questioning at the beginning. Yeah, Judah's gone astray, but you've still got the righteous there. You've got the Habakkuks in the midst. And here they are caught in the crossfire. Nations turn. Nations go from a godly beginning to a godless end. The righteous are oppressed. Sometimes life just stinks. Sometimes life's hard to take. It's hard to understand. There's no explanation for it. And we struggle with that. We look around and we see our world rushing headlong into the arms of Satan. We look around and see a nation with its priorities all messed up. We look around and see a nation that slaughters the innocent from the womb. We look at a nation that has perverted God's plan, perverted God's law. We face the personal tragedies. It's impossible to miss these things. Some of them affect us directly. Some are plastered all over the news, the radio, social media. We're bombarded by them. And sometimes we start out like Habakkuk started out in chapter 1. God, I'm frustrated. I don't understand. How long? Why me? Why us? We get discouraged. We ask those questions. How can God allow this? And then we get to Habakkuk 3. And we get to verses 17, 18, and 19. And we find that he's already provided the answers. So here are those answers tonight. Number one, remember that God knows what we are going through. He sees it all. He has a plan. He allows some things to play out. But he doesn't miss a beat. He knows the direction of a nation. He knows the direction of a personal life. Number two, Habakkuk says, remember how God has dealt with these situations in the past. Every time a people has gone too far to come back, God has dealt with them. Even his own. Number three, we have to wait on him. Times of refreshing are coming. God will carry us, but we have to wait. God turns life at his own speed, not mine. So when I get frustrated that evil is allowed to prevail and we're the ones being oppressed, God says, just hold your horses, just wait. My timing is impeccable. My timing is perfect. Give me a chance to work. As we wait for that, Habakkuk says, number four, bear it. Carry whatever load you have. We can either give up and quit, or we can bear it. And only one of those two choices will bring us through to the other side. Only one of those two choices will allow God to minister to us, to lead us, to carry us. Number five, Habakkuk says, rejoice that God is on the throne. God has it, whether I agree with it or not, understand it or not, see it or not, God has it under control. And he will take care of it in his time. He is bigger than all my heartaches. He's bigger than all of my headaches. He's bigger than all of our tragedies. He's God. So number six, worship him. Bow before his throne. The Lord gives, the Lord is taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord, said Job. He bowed down before the throne of God. And number seven, remember, he is sufficient. He has the outcome under control. So we just got to bear it. No matter the tragedy, whether we're talking about a local tragedy, a worldwide tragedy, or we're talking about a personal one, no matter what it is, God is sufficient to handle it. God is sufficient to sustain us in the midst of it. And God is sufficient to carry us through it to the other side. So here's the key. There always has to be a key. Change our focus. Change our focus from the tragedies to the God in charge. And all of a sudden the light bulb comes on. God has it. God knows what's happening. God knows the outcome. God knows how to get me there. I got to trust him. We've had some tragedies nationwide recently, worldwide. We've had some locally, and we've had some personally. Let God handle it. Let him be the one who's in control. I promise you, just like Habakkuk, if you trust him to do that, he'll take care of you in the end. If you need to lay your tragedies out before the church tonight for our prayers, if you need our help, the invitation's open to you tonight. Like Jesus said, come all who labor and are heavy laden, I'll give you rest. If the tragedy in your life that you've not dealt with is sin, that invitation's open too. To come and put on your Lord in baptism, calling on his name, and have your sins washed away. So we stand and sing.